Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
I'm Aaron Rasmussen. I'm the CEO and founder of Outlier.org. I was co-founder of Masterclass.com. I also started companies in robotics and beverages. And I made a video game.
That's all interesting stuff. So you have a presentation. Would you be able to share it with us? And guys, we'll do some Q&A after his presentation.
Let's do it. Okay, so I know this is a virtual career day, so I'm going to talk about my career, which is what my sister calls it. She always puts it in air quotes because I've done a lot of different things, and that's okay. It's also in business because I think in many ways I'm probably closer to an artist than a business person, but sometimes you have to create a whole business just so you can create the thing you want to exist. So it's important to know where I'm from because it has a lot to do with who I am. I'm from a very small town. Well, actually, I'm from a forest. So this is the house I grew up in. And if you zoom out, you see that there's like nothing around it. And if you keep zooming out, there's still nothing around it. And if you keep zooming out, let's see if it'll let me do that. There, it's slowly happening. There we go. And you keep zooming out. You can see in the far left corner here, a small town called Weston. Population 620. So a lot of people don't even believe this is in the United States. They're like, I can't believe there are things that are this remote out there, but there are. This is Northeastern Oregon. So what that means is you have to learn a lot on your own, which is called being an autodidact. So I spent a lot of time in libraries. The internet only came around when I was kind of in high school. But you also start making stuff to entertain yourself. So I used to make little films. So this is me as about a 10-year-old trying to make Sherlock Holmes with my siblings and basically becoming angrier and angrier. There's like ridiculous music over the top of this. And you can see as the cuts continue, I just start to lose it more and more as my poor friend Josh just wilts in the chair here. He was playing Sherlock himself. So that was this whole fun era of my life, was making little films with my friends. And my older sister said something funny to me once, which is, you know, when we were kids, you were always so mad while you were making these films. And I was just like, man, why is Aaron so intense about this? And she said, I realized it's because when you looked at it, you saw a bunch of 10-year-olds trying to make a film and it drove you insane because you were trying to make real movies. She was like, and I'm glad you finally got to make real stuff with Masterclass. And it's funny. I thought that was a really interesting observation. But a lot of what I learned back then with both directing people and camera angles and narrative, it all filtered into my career. And this is a theme you're going to hear over my talk, which is when you go towards things you're interested in, they have a habit of coming back around and informing your career. And you end up being able to use them. So I went to Boston University and I transferred in credits from Diablo Valley College, which is a community college in California. Because my dad was a middle school science teacher. There were five kids in my family. It's pretty expensive to go to college. So you just figure out a way to make that happen. The first company I started right out of school was a robotics company. It was big robots that cut granite countertops. This was tons of fun and not what I expected to do at all. All I knew is I wanted to be kind of near robots, and this opportunity presented itself. And you just do the best possible job you can of what it is you're doing. And what's great is these things still run around the world almost 18 years later, running on code that my engineers and I wrote back when we were in our early 20s. Then I was tired of robots trying to take swings at me with big saws. So I decided I wanted to do a novelty company. This came from video games. We thought it'd be cool to make a mana potion. It's that blue bottle on the right there. It's something that's been appeared in about 100 video games. One of my buddies and I were just making jokes about energy drinks being like mana potions. Sometimes it's fine to just do a company that's like a joke, basically. Well, it ended up taking off. We sold like 35,000 units in the first couple of months. And then you end up accidentally running a really weird company for 4.5 years because you thought it would be funny. So new rule for me, no more joke companies, but we did have so much fun. In fact, we marketed the whole thing by doing viral videos. This was early days of YouTube. So we like took one of those robots, because the company that I'd sold the first company to, they're like, you know, this one's available. We're like, can we take it to the desert and put bowling balls in it and fling them like a catapult and smash things? And they're like, yeah, sure. So we were out in the heat a lot and we got a little loopy and we decided to wrap it, the bowling ball, in like a towel, dip it in kerosene, light it on fire, and just throw fireballs in the desert. And if you see that little white streak between the robot and the glowing place where it landed, that's actually my co-founder, Eli, running with a flashlight and a fire extinguisher to put it out. And we didn't burn down California. So that was really good. So then after Blindside, my buddy Mike and I decided to make a video game. And I had an interesting experience, which is in high school, I was in a really bad accident and I was blinded. It was chemistry class where I grew up, nobody was wearing goggles. So I ended up not being able to go into chemistry because of it, caused a lot of trauma. But also, I got the interesting experience of having been blind and then regaining my vision, which they didn't think would happen. So after many years to kind of process it, I was talking to my buddy Mike about, you know, what if there's a video game with no graphics? So he sends me a demo like 24 hours later. He was getting his master's in video game design at NYU. And he was like, we should do this. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. So we make this really strange video game, which was, one, a great opportunity to like work with one of my friends making something fun, which I highly recommend. Just, you know, get with some of your friends, make some really fun stuff. And then sometimes, and you'll find this happens over and over, people be interested in like the weird thing you made. So we ended up winning the Games for Change Innovation Award. We ended up on the front cover of Wired. It's actually being made into a feature film now. The Saska sisters are directing it. This was all essentially a strange art game about being blind. And the thing we're sort of most proud of with it is that we worked so hard to create a world where like you turn with your phone and then the gyroscopes in the phone allow you to turn inside the world, that the blind gamers could actually finish it in half the time it took sighted gamers to finish it, which means that we're simulating something real about the blind experience. And our goal was, let's make something that's totally the same for both blind and sighted gamers. Okay, so after that, I started Masterclass with my co-founder, David, which I heard had actually been on here before, talking a career day. So we're gonna need a thumbs up or a raise your hand. Who knows what this is? Okay, a lot of people. My guess is you're gonna say the Mona Lisa, which is correct, but also not, because the one on the right is the actual Mona Lisa by Leonardo da Vinci. The one on the left is called Prada's Mona Lisa. And the reason is because it's in a gallery and we don't know who made it. In fact, it was only recently discovered. It's da Vinci's apprentice painted the same model from a slightly different perspective. Now, this teaches us a ton about the way the Mona Lisa looked, but it also teaches us something really interesting and kind of tragic. Da Vinci had an apprentice, and we don't know who that was. And they created this beautiful piece of art, and nobody else got to be an apprentice. So it makes you think, why can't everyone be an apprentice to the greatest people in the world? And that's the idea behind Masterclass. Why not democratize access to genius? Why not allow all of ourselves to be apprentices to the greatest minds in the world? So here is a little bit about how we sort of make them. It's kind of an interesting setup. So that's me on the left. I end up directing a number of these myself, kind of set the style, et cetera. And I sit behind a laptop with the questions, and then my team will be like texting me frantically. And I'm actually looking through a periscope at Aaron Sorkin in this case, famous TV writer. So he's giving the masterclass to my face. So in many ways, it's my personal perspective on that. He's responding to the way I'm looking. I'm asking him questions. But because it's a periscope, it's going directly into the camera. So then you as the viewer get to feel like you're having a conversation with one of these really fantastic people. This one was an absolute blast to do. I'm very proud of the way it came out. This wallpaper took 2.5 days to find, by the way. I know this is a really small detail, but you'll hear me talk about do everything the best possible way you can. This wallpaper, all I wanted was like a dusty blue with cream colored fleur-de-lis on it. And we seriously could not find that in all of Los Angeles. So it's actually little cream colored grapes. It looks close enough. And sometimes you're looking at something like that and you're thinking, wow, I'm being a crazy person. And then other times you'll see it after, like I'm seeing it now and saying, it was worth it. It was worth 2.5 days of looking through wallpaper. So here's another one, Serena Williams, you know, one of the greatest tennis players in history, number one in the world for many, many years. This was pretty amazing. Bill Guntentag directed this one. And we set up at her home in Florida with this huge setup, filmed it in slow motion so you could really understand the mechanics of the way she was hitting the ball. Worked with Christina Aguilera, who's one of the most impressive singers I've ever seen in my entire life, and had to figure out, how do you teach singing in a pre-recorded class? So one thing that this all requires is it sometimes looks effortless to come out with something, sort of an overnight success, right? Masterclass was pretty successful right out of the gate. This is literally 2 a.m., like a week before we launched, and our VP of video, and she was a creative producer at the time, but she's now our VP of video at Outlier, and I editing the James Patterson class basically until we're blue in the face. What this all ends up being is a course where we try to communicate the knowledge of the world's best. So I'll play like, well, I don't know if the sound will come through, but you get the idea. You can see the trailers online. You're probably familiar with all of them. Okay, so after Masterclass, I took a year off, I traveled, I tried to understand the world a bit better. Because at the end of the day, I've never really known what I want to do. Everybody kept telling me that I would know what I wanted to do. Just, oh, wait till you're a senior in high school. Well, I was never a senior. I actually went to college early. So I'm in college and I'm like, I have no idea what I want to do. I'll get an advertising degree and a computer science degree. And everybody said, don't worry, when you become a junior in college or a senior in college, you'll know what you want to do. Nope, no idea what I wanted to do. That's totally okay. So I've realized you sort of go through these periods where you just need to go towards the things that you're interested in, because those all sort of will circle around a central focus that can become your career, and in my case has. In fact, Masterclass incorporated a lot of these different elements from my life. I used to play music. I got to write the cello music for the Werner Herzog class. My friend Christine Sunu played it on her cello. So with travel, what I found is you just expose yourself to all these different perspectives, ideas, et cetera. And I came back from that realizing, wow, education's done so much for me in my life, but the access to education really isn't there. So how do we make access to great online for-credit education? And we do it very inexpensively. And that's the idea behind outlier.org, which is what I'm working on right now. I know we've only got like 15 minutes here, so I'm zipping right through this.
No, it's fine. Take your time. This is perfect.
Okay, great. So when we think about what goes into something like Outlier, right? So one, it's people that I've met. For example, our VP of product is Micah Stolfi, who I wrote the video game with. Because when we thought about education, the future of education, we think video games. Right? You can learn Fortnite, which is incredibly complex, and there's no teachers there. I mean, granted, you might learn it by an 8-year-old screaming at you that you're doing it wrong, and I don't love that, but it is one way to learn. You can learn all sorts of video games without teachers. It is a type of an autodidactic experience of teaching yourself, except the video game is curated usually an interactive tutorial. So when we think about where the ideas come from for the next generation of education, these things that we just had fun making ended up influencing what we do in the creation of college courses. In fact, to this day, a number of my executives and I all play Valorant on Thursday nights together. It's just a really fun way to hang out, but to also discuss the new interactions. In fact, Mike and I played a bit of Apex Legends, and it gave us this really interesting perspective on cross-language communication. So Apex was one of the first games where we saw the ping system, where you could ping various objects or locations in a video game, and it would call it out. Let's say it would be like, enemy over there. Let's go here. I'm watching there. But it would say it in the native language of the person you're playing with. So you could have cross-cultural, in-depth communications, and you'd have fun playing with people, even though you didn't have a common language. That's really cool. Those are the types of things you can use in education. So all of these bizarre interests that I've had throughout my life have started to come together and helping inform what my career can be. It didn't start initially that way. So I grew up, you know, very low income. So I didn't have a lot of opportunities growing up. So the robots were my first opportunity. So I was going to take that opportunity because, and this is me at the age of about 22, standing on my robot, trying to calibrate the camera at 3 a.m. This is not what I wanted to be doing when I was 22, right? I'd either want to be like sleeping or going out or something. I just remind myself, I'm doing this now so I can do that later. So that would be a company I dreamed about. This is the thing that's going to get me there. I also found that you have to learn to give and take criticism well. You need to be able to do that. I struggled with it when I was younger. Somebody would give me criticism and I would just tell them they're wrong. But then about 3 days later, I'd be like, actually, you might be right about that. And through my life, I've tried to shorten that time between when somebody gives me criticism and when I figure out they're right or wrong. Now I'd like to believe that I'm down to just a few seconds, but once in a while, that 3 day thing comes out. The second part is learning to give criticism well. It's a hard thing to do, but you are doing your friends a favor. I am so lucky that I have friends that know when they see me just totally exhausted. Let's say I've, you know, finished, I think the trailer's done for a class, you know, it could be masterclass, could be outlier, you know, which is what I work on currently. And I show them the trailer and they'll say something like, are you done with that? They know exactly what's coming next because they also want me to do a good job. Even if they know it's going to be tough to tell really exhausted Aaron, you might want to take a few frames off that, or this part isn't clear. Figure out a group of friends where you can give and take criticism because you will make them better. They will make you better. And you will be so thankful for people that don't just cheer for you. They need to also cheer for you. And because believe me, when they do cheer for you and you know they're comfortable criticizing you, it means more than anything. So along the way, I've had a zillion setbacks. I have setbacks every day. Like, for example, you know, Ralph had mentioned that he read my most recent op-ed in Fortune. And here's the thing. When I write an op-ed, so, you know, I've gotten a few and it's like the Wall Street Journal and stuff like this, I've had so many rejections. At this stage in my career, I don't even get emails back from editors sometimes, right? So it's like, my skill here isn't that I write this amazing op-ed that everyone wants to publish. My skill is just getting smacked down over and over and over again and continuing to send out those emails because that's simply how it's done. And once you realize that the goal isn't perfection, you'll stop beating yourself up about perfection so much. You're just really looking for, you know, doing something. I'll just skip the next one here. Nope, I'm not. You're really looking to do something that you're proud of. And that means you're either proud of the output, you're proud of the try that you gave it. So overall, go towards what's interesting to you. Sometimes you find out that's not what's interesting to you at all. I had a friend, her dream was to start a barbecue restaurant. She did. She was like, this is a horrible nightmare. I never want to do that again. And you know what? She is so happy working in tech in corporate communications now, because she got to try out that dream and realized it looked nothing like what she actually wanted to do. And here's the thing, it was a successful restaurant and I still think about those sandwiches. It was so good. So currently, while I CEO a company, for fun, I actually do TikToks. And it all started with, again, doing something that I just thought was interesting. So I repaired this fox using like the kintsugi style where you put gold in the seams. And 1.6 million people liked it. It was my first one. And I was like, interesting. It's just such a reminder that if you do stuff that's interesting to you and you don't worry too much about what other people think of it, other people might really enjoy it. Now, if you look at these, you'll find that some stuff people really enjoy. And you'll see millions of views. Other times you'll see that people just really don't care. And I do not mind it either way. I spent all this time restoring this painting and I was so proud of it. And just no one cared about it. It's like my least viewed one ever. But what I've found is if you keep doing these things, you will attract the people in your life that are curious about the things you're curious about. And then you'll find those people that are doing the things that you're interested in. And that is a really exciting place to be. So do work that you can be proud of, go towards what's interesting to you, and I'm sure you'll have very interesting careers, especially in a time when we don't really know what the future looks like. There is no set pathway anymore. That's all right. I never had a set. So I'm like the first of the, I never had a set pathway. Anytime somebody's like, oh, I always knew I wanted to work on transportation since I was seven. I'm so jealous. If you're one of those people, you're so lucky. If you knew you wanted to be a doctor, go do that. If you're somebody who, like me, is, I'm going to figure it out when I'm like 78 and I'm like, oh, I should have been a dancer, like whatever it is. That's okay. You know, do interesting stuff in the meantime. Thank you very much.
That was awesome. Thank you very, very much. We really appreciate you taking the time to create that presentation. Not bad for a kid from rural Oregon. I think you've done very well for yourself.
Thank you.
I got some questions emailed to me, and guys, the chat is opened up. Do you mind if we just jump right into some of the questions?
Let's do it. Let me just let my next meeting know. I think we had 15 minutes. Let me just let them know. Oh, good. We still have some time. Perfect.
So one of the kids emailed, they want to know what is, as an innovator, what, in your opinion, is the biggest dilemma you have faced, like a common thing that you faced at every single venture that you've gone down?
Too many good ideas, not enough resources to do them. So the biggest problem that I run into is, if you're an innovator, you're going to see a million ways to make something great. And the more things you make, the more you realize you really only get to use one or two ideas. So with Outlier, I literally had a list of about 100 features that I thought could make online education better. We had to cut it down to 4. That is a hard thing to do because, you know what? Let's say probably 25 of those ideas were really good. They still are really good. And you have to convince yourself that you'll get to it in the future. Early in my career, the difficult thing, and Ira Glass has a good speech about this, if you look him up, is having taste before you have talent. So frequently somebody who's an innovator will know what good looks like, but you're not quite capable of doing it yourself yet. And it's so frustrating. It's like, especially if you're like an artist, you will know what a good drawing looks like. Then you'll draw something and you'll look at it and say, that's not good. And it's incredibly discouraging. Don't get discouraged. You'll get there, because having taste is like 95% of the battle. You can get your talent into that spot. So those are the two things that you know, starting out can be really rough, and you sort of only realize much later on how to overcome them.
Do you find, and this is for myself, do you find that when you're working in different teams, right? So from the robotics to Outlier to Masterclass, is there, when you're creating that team, do you have to have a lot of dreamers on your team, or do you think a lot of doers, or some type of combination of both? Because I've been on teams where people are like, hey, talk about the Super Bowl without ever actually playing a single game. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, do you have that issue?
Yes. So the short answer is, team construction is a really critical thing. And this actually comes back to video games again. Where I learned a lot of good leadership and teamwork was playing from like Counter-Strike many, many years ago, because you realize there's a few different sort of types of contributors to teams. You got the people who kind of straggle in last because they want to get the most points. You got the people who are down to go right through the front door. You can't have all the same thing on a team. You want a very diverse set of abilities. You want complementary abilities. The thing that I think can be difficult, which Ralph might be alluding to here, is I remember working in an ad agency over a summer when I was about 20 and realizing I did not want to work in advertising. But I realized there's a few different types of people. I sort of broke them out in advertising roles. So one is like a critic. That's a person who can tell you what's wrong with something. Now, they can't do anything about it. It can be really annoying. It can be valuable to have a critic that is right about things. But on a small team, that's brutal, right? Because then you just have somebody that's criticizing something. The sort of associate role to that, or associated role, is editor. An editor is a critic, but they know how to fix it. And now that's cool. Now they might not necessarily be able to fix it themselves, but they know how. So that's a really good person to have on the team. Then you've got the creative, which Ralph might call the dreamer. You've got to have that type of person on it. And then you've also got to have a producer. And a producer sort of takes what the creative's thinking of. They've got the editor in tow, and they can make this thing all happen. The most important thing I've learned about teams, though, is people don't need or have to be one role. I've struggled with that in my career. Like at Masterclass, I both ran creative and was also the chief technology officer. You know how difficult it is for somebody to look at somebody and say, oh, you're the CTO, but also wait, you're directing these? It's really hard for people. They want to put you in boxes. It's taken me a long time to get my far enough in my career that I can just say, I'm both of those things.
That's good. We have, you know, thank you for that advice. We have Harshika. Harshika, you should be able to unmute to ask your question. You had a very good question, my friend.
Okay, so first of all, thank you very much for your presentation. So I've got a question about when you have an idea, but you don't have any knowledge about it. So for instance, you want to create a cosmetic brand, for instance, and you don't know how to make them. So how do you do when you have any knowledge about this topic?
That is a great question. How do you get started when you really have no clue about something? I do this constantly. I like making stuff. You know, I made this little, God, it's really sharp. I made this little model of like a Mandelbrot set. It's a type of fractal equation. I had no idea how I'd figure out how to 3D print a mathematical equation like this. So in that case, I just started Googling stuff that made sense around it. Now, when it comes to cosmetics, the energy drinks company was really similar. My co-founder and I are like looking at energy drinks and we're like, how does somebody make an energy drink? So we tried Googling it. There's like some weird companies that will sort of like put your label on theirs, but we're like, no, we want it to be in a potion bottle. Like, how do you do this? So what we did is on the back of a lot of, yeah, like this has it, is a seltzer water. A lot of products will have a phone number for the company. So he and I just started calling them and we were like, how do you make an energy drink? Like, what's the factory that makes that called? And the first three or four were total dead ends. So it was like a random kind of customer service person that was just like, good luck, guys. And then finally, we got the founder of some tiny energy drink company goes, oh, it's called a co-packer, which is a really weird name. Co-packers are what put the formula into the bottle. So we search co-packer and it turns out there's tons of them in LA. So then we talked to the co-packer. They're like, you need a formulation lab. You need this type of bottle. You've got to get a label. And we're like, who makes labels? And they send it to us. So talk to people, literally DM people on Instagram, call the numbers on products that you like. People that like to make things frequently like to help other people make things. You know, I have a friend that says artists make art, right? People who like to make, they're always making. So they always have their own ideas that they're interested in. They're frequently non-competitive.
That's such good advice, especially for all these kids on here who are interested in going down a certain career path and not having that background knowledge. So before we let you go, guys, I put in the chat the link. We have a lot of awesome upcoming learning events coming up. The United States Navy is giving us a personal tour of one of their ships. We have a National Parks Ranger, an FBI agent, et cetera. Feel free to sign up for any that meet your interests. Aaron, before we let you go, because I want to keep it within that 30 minutes-ish, what kind of advice would you give to these kids as they go off into the world figuring out what they want to do with their lives?
Talk to people. Literally, you can feel free to call up companies and ask for somebody who does the job that you want to do. They used to call this a job shadow where I grew up. And I wanted to be a television journalist at one point. So I called up the local TV station and I was like, can I do a job shadow of a local journalist? And they were like, yeah, okay, whatever. So I showed up and they'd forgotten that they'd said okay. And they're like, oh God, it's the kid from the phone. It's probably about 14 at the time. And this really nice reporter took me around for the day and we just like filmed news stories together. And I found out that it was a horrible job and I did not want to do it. So it was a really valuable use of my time. I did the same thing. I thought I was going to be a lawyer in college because I was like, I don't know. I just want some money so I don't have to worry about money all the time. And every lawyer I talked to said, whatever you do with your life, Aaron, do not become a lawyer. And I was like, wow, that's really intense. But you know what? They were right. So call the person that has the job that you're interested in. If that doesn't exist yet, awesome. Get to Googling, figure out how to do something from scratch. I just made a nuclear watch. I finished it on Friday. Nobody had done that since the 1970s, and it was a totally different type. I didn't even know if it was possible. So I just started Googling stuff and putting things together. And like, I'm not a nuclear engineer. I had to do a lot of research to make sure that I didn't like do horrible things to myself with a bunch of tritium. But having no knowledge of a field is totally fine. Just go out there, talk to people, read. There's no secret to learning all this stuff. Just taking that information.
That's absolutely wonderful advice. And guys, definitely check out his article that just released on Fortune magazine on Gen Zers in college. Very interesting read. So Aaron, before I end the meeting for all, before I let everyone go, I'm going to let everyone unmute and then I'll end the meeting for all. Everyone, can we say thank you to Aaron for spending time out of his very valuable day to come inspire and educate so many of you today. Thank you so much, Aaron.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.